And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. It was, you know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bye, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Shane. We got an exciting show. Sorry about that. We did not have two like we promised last week. We almost didn't have one this week, so...
This is all with me, guys. Guys, I got a lot of stuff going on right now just with work, and we're trying to clean up the schedule so we can start getting a little more consistent, but for the time being, we're just going to have to wing it. So, again, we'll notify you on Twitter and Instagram and all that and let you know when a show's coming up. But, again, I apologize. Hopefully by the season, when it, you know, cranks up, we'll be back onto our daily show.
Yeah, and if Shane does not come through once again next week, don't worry, people, because not only do we have a guest lined up for this one, I've got a really solid guest lined up. I'm going to record with them tomorrow, and that'll air next week. So I'll put that out, if nothing else. So guaranteed we'll get you next week. But we wanted to finish strong, and let's do that, Shane. It was the Friday podcast, and we got to start, I think, with the biggest news of last week that we have not yet touched on. Mississippi State, a lot going on down in Starkville. We'll get to the quarterback. The quarterback's the big thing, what I really wanted to talk about, but because our interview is centered around the addition of Tommy Stevens, let's focus immediately on Joe Moorhead here. He's got a contract extension, and for anyone that did not see this, it was kind of sold as Mississippi State and had agreed to a new four-year deal for Joe Moorhead coming off his 8-5 debut, which, you know, Shane, I know you and I both have been kind of questioning if this guy is the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had high hopes for them. I thought they'd win about 10 games last year, and they obviously didn't get that done. But if you look in the history of Mississippi State, it's been since 1939 that they've had a coach in his first year win 8 games. So, I mean, this is not a program that is used to winning this many games. I don't think that's really an excuse for maybe not getting it done last year. But the one note that I did want to make on this quote-unquote four-year deal, that's the longest in the state of Mississippi that any contract can go. So he was on a three-year deal, and so it's essentially more of a one-year deal. It's not, mm-hmm. not really a four-year extension, but while it is kind of noteworthy, is they've really jacked up his salary, Shane. This guy, he was scheduled to make $2.6 million next year. He's going to make a little over $3 million, and then the following year, $3.1 million, $3.2 million the next year, and $3.35 million in 2022. So he's getting about an average of $500,000 more per season. Mm. And what are your thoughts on Joe Moorhead coming off an 8-5 debut, getting I don't know if you really even want to call it an extension, because I think they just want to make sure that he's locked in as long as 4 years for recruiting purposes. But what are your thoughts on Joe Moorhead getting a pretty big raise?
Wish that was my boss, Mike, you know? a couple of things that I understand the four-year deal. You know, it sucks that they can't go longer in Mississippi, but you need to have a four-year agreement. I don't agree with the pay raise. I don't think Joe is going anywhere. I don't think they needed to give him that money.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done more maybe with incentives, you know, getting to a bowl game or something like that, make it a little heavy toward the back end.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's crazy just guaranteeing him money with what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why they did this. I think it was just more than anything, just showing a level of commitment to Coach Moorhead. And, you know, it's not, you know, we shouldn't try to frame this like he had a damn Chad Morris year. You know,
it's nowhere
that bad, but, you know, there's just going to be big questions on this team next year, losing so much defensive talent. They got to get this offense off the ground because at times it was pathetic last year. But that's where their other big addition comes in, Shane. They landed Penn State graduate transfer Tommy Stevens, who, you know, I don't know much about this guy, Shane, but from what I understood, he was going to be Penn State's starting quarterback. At least that was the thought after Trace McSorley, their standout quarterback, went on to the NFL. And next thing you know, out of spring football, Tommy Stevens announces he was going to leave. You know, we kind of hinted at this, I think, on a previous podcast, but how big is it that Joe Moorhead's landing a quarterback that he's very familiar with, coached him at Penn State, and now, you know, what does this say for Keaton Thompson, who you'd think would be the Mississippi State starter? We've touched on that, too, where the players seem to be really bought in on Keaton, but now they're adding another quarterback to the mix.
Well, I mean, this is something you kind of hit on in this interview that we're about to post, and I just think that he's such an athlete that they may find another avenue for him. So I don't want to give away too much before the interview, but after we get done with that, I'd like to kind of expand on maybe this is something to do with a different role. You know, get him down here because Mississippi State is going to, I think, just judging off the spring game, what I've seen, the lack of playmakers they have on that perimeter, this may be somebody that can step in and you know, be that big play threat that they needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Shane, this is not a podcast where we bullshit the audience. We didn't know jack about this quarterback.
Yeah, I didn't.
So instead of just making stuff up, throwing stuff against the wall, we've reached out to Audrey Snyder. She covers Penn State for The Athletic. She does a terrific job there. I really recommend, if you're an Athletic subscriber, to, you know, give her stuff a read. She's got a really good post on there about the relationship between Tommy Stevens and Joe Moorhead. And I just thought it was pretty interesting how she noted that they stayed in contact all last year, even though obviously they were on two different schools, but, you know, they have that tight a bond. Then there's a GA down there at Mississippi State, she mentions, that was a former quarterback at Penn State. So that was a connection there, too. So let's just jump to our interview here with Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. All right, we're pleased to be joined on the podcast by Audrey Snyder. She writes for The Athletic, a great website if you're not following it already. You can follow her on Twitter at AUDSNYDER and the number 4. So Audrey, thanks again for joining me. I really appreciate it.
You got it. No problem.
So the main reason, you know, why I wanted to reach out to you, for anyone that has not seen it, I recommend you jump over to The Athletic now. Audrey's written a really good piece here on Tommy Stevens, who's of course the former Penn State graduate transfer quarterback that recently announced he's going to be rejoining Joe Moorhead down at Mississippi State. And, you know, the big question, I think, on a lot of SEC fans' minds is, why did this guy leave Penn State? It seemed like, just from what I know about him, which is not much, that there was a good chance heading into the offseason that this was going to be Penn State's starter this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of the same question that a lot of Penn State fans have been trying to figure out, too. I mean, it was definitely a surprise when Tommy Stevens decided, after Penn State wrapped up spring ball, Penn State was going through their exit interviews, and it's been a really interesting year, really, 10 or 12 months for Tommy, because there were two foot surgeries that he went through. So one of which happened prior to last season when he was backing up Trace McSorley, and the other one that happened in late December, which actually kept him off the bowl trip because he went back home to Indiana and had surgery. So the timing here was really interesting because Tommy missed the first 4 or 5 games last year as the backup quarterback, but Penn State also had created this role, this X-factor role that they called the lion position, just for him. They created this role ahead of the Fiesta Bowl to kind of make Tommy a de facto starter because they felt this highly of him, that they wanted to get him on the field. And so we would see them use this lion role sporadically where he'd either be catching passes, he'd be throwing passes, he would run the ball. And he's a big kid. I mean, 6'4". I want to say Mississippi State lists him around 240 on their introductory, on their web release when they introduced him. So Penn State was trying to do these different things with him, but then really got away from it last year partially because he wasn't fully healthy early on in the season, and then had this kind of nagging foot injury that he played through, and then ultimately had surgery on it at the end of the season. And because of that surgery, it limited him in spring ball. So at that point, Penn State has backup quarterback Sean Clifford, who steps in, and Clifford got the number two reps last spring as well when Tommy Stevens was injured. So you really kind of have this whole situation where the backup quarterback was given this golden opportunity because Stevens had been hurt. And so James Franklin said in January that Tommy Stevens would be atop the depth chart in spring ball, but then Tommy wasn't a full participant all spring. So Sean Clifford then kind of steps up, takes hold of that job, and then at the end of spring ball, it certainly was a surprise because Penn State, understandably so, was noncommittal as to who their quarterback would be. And I think for Tommy going into his fifth year, that just wasn't enough of a guarantee that he would be the guy. So he, you know, presumably just felt more comfortable going elsewhere, trying to win a quarterback job as opposed to staying here, despite Penn State still not publicly announcing that Sean Clifford's their quarterback. Certainly behind closed doors, Tommy Stevens wanted more of a guarantee.
And I guess he thinks he must have a great shot there. Like you said, Joe Moorhead in Mississippi State's statement announced that he will be given an opportunity. And that's caused a lot of SEC fans to kind of scratch their head a little bit because they do have Keaton Thompson, who he has played briefly. He looked really good in a bowl game 2 years ago. He stepped in for Nick Fitzgerald in the opener last year, and I believe he scored 7 touchdowns. But similar to this Penn State situation, Moorhead and his staff have not named Keaton Thompson the starter. What are the odds, just from the Penn State side, what you've seen from Tommy Stevens and what you know of the Joe Moorhead offense? And you write about their connection. They stayed in touch last season, even though they were on different teams, obviously. Do you give it a good chance that Tommy Stevens could be Mississippi State's starter next season?
I mean, absolutely. I think you have to, because you look at teams and, you know, of course, anytime they go out to add a graduate transfer, they're looking for somebody who can make an immediate impact. Otherwise, they're not going to invest the scholarship in him, you know, for Tommy, maybe 6-8 months, whatever it is, to get through the season as a grad transfer. So rather than having a guy that you can develop for 4 or 5 years, you're kind of taking a flyer on this one player to get you through. And, you know, you look at what Penn State's offense did with Joe Moorhead, and they thrived. I mean, we saw it with Trace McSorley. And the interesting thing, Penn State fans fell in love with Tommy Stevens, or more so fell in love with the idea of Tommy Stevens. And I say that because the usage of him solely as a quarterback, we never got to see a whole lot of that. Some of that was because Trace McSorley seemingly never got hurt. And the other part of that was when McSorley did get hurt last year, Stevens was also hurt. So, you know, you just didn't get to see him. So we'd occasionally see him in mop-up roles, but not very often. So there was a lot of questions Penn State fans wanted to know, you know, what kind of quarterback is Tommy Stevens? Well, I think you take what you've seen with Trace McSorley, which is a lot of mobility, a lot of these chunk plays, explosive plays. Tommy Stevens is a smart kid, really heady guy, loves the game of football, had grown up on football. His dad coaches football, his uncle coaches football, all of this. I mean, this kid grew up on it, was verbally committed to Indiana before flipping his commitment to Penn State. So, you know, this is somebody who just wants this 1 year to get his shot to try and catapult to the next level. And, you know, you see what Moorhead was able to do here at Penn State. To me, as soon as, you know, the news broke that Tommy Stevens was in the transfer portal, right away it was, okay, you got to be thinking this guy's going to be looking at a shot at Mississippi State, because it just made sense. You know, you look at kind of their quarterback situation, Tommy's familiarity. I mean, let's be honest, where else could he have gone to try and realistically win a starting job in, you know, 6-8 weeks, right? Like, he has to go to a place where he knows the offense, where he's comfortable. And even all the way down to Mississippi State graduate transfer, Mississippi State graduate assistant, Billy Fessler. Fessler was the person who would relay the signals in when he was a reserve quarterback at Penn State. And Tommy Stevens at that point was backing up Trace McSorley. So I mean, those guys even know each other. So there's just so many connections between Penn State and Mississippi State right now that you're just kind of continuing to see that play out.
Now, one big question I do have about Tommy Stevens, because this is going to be the question that every Mississippi State fan has until they see this guy in action. But have you seen him throw the ball downfield? Or does he have that in his game? Because that's the thing that Nick Fitzgerald was never able to consistently do. And it basically derailed Mississippi State's offense under Joe Moorhead all last season. It seemed like anytime Fitzgerald could hit that pass, the receiver would drop it. So they're really looking for someone that can throw the ball down the field. And Tommy Stevens, I'm not sure he's shown that. Have you seen that at all?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I had a chance to sit down with Tommy Stevens ahead of Penn State spring practice. And one of the things I said to him was, you know, who are you as a quarterback? Because we really haven't seen that here. And he said that, you know, he understands why people will kind of have questions here about his arm, just because he really wasn't given the opportunity to do it, because he was always penciled into that versatile role. And, you know, teammates love the guy. You know, they loved him. They loved his leadership, which is where I think Penn State could certainly have some challenges to fill, just because he was so well-liked. But in terms of the arm strength, I mean, in game situations, it was just so limited in seeing what he could do that we never got to see it. I mean, he missed this spring, and then he missed the spring before as well with an injury. But I will say this, I mean, there's a reason, I think at least, why Penn State was ecstatic last spring when Tommy Stevens decided that he was going to wait it out another year behind Trace McSorley and kind of, you know, buck the national trends of quarterbacks waiting for their turn. So, you know, I say that because they certainly felt, at least at that point, really strong about what they had in him. And I think, I mean, I remember having a conversation with Joe Moorhead about it last summer when I went to Mississippi State. He said, you know, yeah, Tommy's going to have a bright future, you know, whenever that time comes. Well, sure enough, you know, fast forward about 10 or so months, and here we are having a conversation about, you know, the guy who could potentially be Joe Moorhead's new quarterback.
All right, final question I have for you on Tommy Stevens. So, kind of like you said, when I looked up this guy's numbers, as soon as he decided he was going to Mississippi State, you know, the passing stats are not really there, just because, as you stated, he wasn't given a lot of opportunity to showcase that. But he looks like a great runner. He looks like an amazing receiver. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Mississippi State also needs. Is there any chance that, say, he, you know, finishes to be the backup to Keaton Thompson? Could we see Tommy Stevens in, you know, that role on the field where he's just kind of the same, I believe you called it the lion package, something similar yeah. like that at Mississippi State? Or do you think he just strictly wants to be a quarterback?
You know, the thing with Tommy always has been at Penn State, which, you know, teammates praised him for this, the coaches raved about it, was that he was always just a team-first guy, wanted to be on the field. But I think, you know, what this transfer ultimately signifies is he's a quarterback, he identifies as a quarterback, he wants to be a quarterback at the next level. Should he not win the job, and could he help them in that X factor role, would he do it? Absolutely. Is that his preference? Is that why he's going there? Absolutely not. You know, I mean, I think that was kind of the thing here. It was, if he didn't win the job here, what would happen? How would they use him? Because quite frankly, I mean, his role last year out of the Lion package wasn't really what any of us expected. I mean, we expected it would have been a much more significant role than it was, just because of how complimentary everyone had been about him and his skill set, the versatility, and those kinds of things. So, I mean, I'm really curious just watching from afar to see how this quarterback job shapes up for Mississippi State. But absolutely, just in the snippets that we have seen of Tommy Stevens, you know, when he runs, he's a physical runner because he's a big guy. He has that mobility, but he also has that versatility. And I mean, I think the familiarity with the offense is just so huge for him at this point, which is why I think he really has a legitimate shot to kind of win this job, because you just put all those factors together. You know, his relationship with Joe Moorhead, they know each other, they have the familiarity there. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this thing plays out.
All right, Andre, once again, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, giving us some insight there on Tommy Stevens and the Penn State situation. You can follow her work on The Athletic, highly recommend it, and on Twitter, at AUDSNYDER, and the number 4. Thank you so much.
You got it. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, Shane, so really in-depth stuff there from Audrey. I really appreciate her joining us here and giving us some insight into Tommy Stevens. What was your main takeaway from that interview?
Well, something we hit on before the interview. I think Coach is not sold on Keaton. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Or he would have been announced already. I do feel like Schrader may be the future for Mississippi State. That's just the, you know, I'm just reading the tea leaves here. But I think that he's not ready. And they need somebody to go out there and do things now. But don't be surprised if this cat comes in and something that she touched on is more of a kind of like an Antoine Randall Ale for the Steelers, you know. It's just somebody that has the capability of being a quarterback, but maybe more, you know, maybe more of a benefit to the team putting him on the outside, letting him do something with his legs, because the way she talks, you know, it's a very physical runner, and this is somebody that can make those big plays that they're going to need.
Yeah, because that's certainly something Mississippi State was lacking, was the big play ability. And from what I have seen from this Tommy Stevens, I'm actually going back and trying to watch his games. It's tough to just focus in on him because he just kind of comes in so rarely, and he's lining up as a running back and a receiver and all these things. But he doesn't have a lot of passing stats, but he's got terrific receiving stats and rushing stats. So the only concern, and obviously Joe Moorhead and his staff, they have a significantly more an idea of what this guy can do than I ever would. But mm-hmm. He seems very much in that Nick Fitzgerald role, to where he's maybe just a terrific athlete, but not that quarterback. And my hope is that that he can complete that downfield throw, and they must have confidence in him to do it because they're bringing him in. But what about this, Shane? You're bringing in a veteran that knows the offense, that knows the system. Is there a chance that Keaton, I'm not saying he's not working to get that job already, but maybe this elevates him even more to where, you know, before there may not have been a real threat for him to unseat him going into the season opener, but now there certainly is. And I think if Keaton Thompson elevates his play based on what we've already seen from him on the field, I mean, if he continues to progress and he gets the offense down, this addition may actually even be good for him.
Yeah, and I don't want to speculate, but maybe that's what he needed. Maybe this is more about his, you know, off the field training or focus or priorities. If he felt like he was just going to walk into this job, and if he didn't prepare for it, you know, coach ain't going to throw him out there. But now here you got another guy coming in, old Tommy boy. And when he gets down here, who knows, this may spark that fire in Keaton and get him competitive. I mean, it's a perfect time. He's got all offseason to prepare and work with the wide receiver. So this may be just what Keaton needed to elevate his game.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane. So that was a ton of Mississippi State talk.
Real quick, did you tell her to tell James Franklin to kiss my ass? Did you get that one out?
Does he still have you blocked on Twitter?
Yep, still blocked. Anchor down.
All right, let's go around the league.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting with your boys there on Rocky Top. Good old Rocky Top. You know, this is one of my favorite times of the offseason. Obviously not a big fan of the college football offseason because there's obviously nothing going on, but what there is going on every year around this time, the release of the preseason magazines. Everyone obviously knows, listen to this podcast, I've got some pretty strong opinions, and I really do study this stuff. I mean, I go back and watch these damn games. I don't watch NBA or college basketball. I'm watching this stuff all year round. But I do appreciate other people's perspective. And in the new Lindy's, Shane, they've got some pretty bold comments here from an anonymous coach. It's anonymous coach comment time. These come out every year. And I don't know, it's just one of my favorite things to just go, because while a lot of people look at this stuff and they think it's kind of gutless to, you know, have comments and not put your name to it, which I understand in today's culture. But at the same time, I think that allows some people to speak more freely and honestly. And I think what they said about Jeremy Pruitt and his Tennessee program, I think they hit the nail on the head. So I'm going to read it here, Shane. I want to get your reaction. This is from the Lindy's Sports Southeastern Conference Magazine preview on Tennessee. Tennessee needs a talent upgrade. It's going to take 5 years to get it done. I think Jeremy Pruitt will get it done because he's a good enough coach and recruiter to get it done, but it'll take that long. The reason is there's people in the league already getting it done, and they have no margin for error because they play Alabama, Georgia, and Florida every year. So that's the end of the quote, Shane. What is your reaction to that?
I mean, nobody likes to hear rebuild, Mike, but we know that's what we're in. I mean, the talent, you could see when you play teams like Georgia or just the ones you mentioned. When we played maybe not so much Florida last year, but, you know, I do think the gap was there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there. And it's going to take – even if you have, like last recruiting class, we had all these five stars that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to be freshmen. I mean, you cannot expect them to go out – and be the game changers. You know, Wanya's still got to put weight on. He's still getting bigger to make that impact. There's only a handful of people in the entire college football league that are like a Trey Smith that can come in and just be a dominant force. And I mean, it's a diamond in the rough. So again, nobody likes to hear the word rebuild, but that's what we're in, man.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of speculation about what exactly is this coach referring to, because he says, you know, get it done. That's the exact quote. What exactly does that mean? It's not that specific, but, you know, the fact that he's mentioning Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, I take that to mean, you know.
You got to pay them. You got to pay these recruits, man. Just kidding.
No, I take that to mean when you take the field against Alabama, against Georgia, against Florida, that it's essentially a toss-up game. And that's what I think what they're trying to get to. Not to the point where Tennessee's just kicking everyone's ass, because in the SEC, unless you're Alabama, that just doesn't happen. You know, I mean, how many times LSU, when they go up against Alabama, they've not been getting it done, but I think fans expect them to win that game at home.
Absolutely.
They just beat Georgia, you know, and then they turn around and lose to Florida. So that's kind of where you want to be, that area where you're just competing. I mean, how many times last year, Shane, did Tennessee, is basically any time they played, you know, an upper echelon team, they got their ass kicked?
Yeah. No, that's what it's got to be, Mike. We can't go into a half saying we're out of it, like the Alabamas, like the Georgia, like the Florida. I mean, Florida and Georgia talent aren't the same right now. But that game last year, there was a moment where you're like, man, Florida could win this thing. So, I mean, that's where you got to be, where you're competitive, where you're going into that fourth quarter and it's still anybody's ball game. We're not there. And it all starts with the talent and the coaching. And I really do think we have a great coaching staff, and I think we have great recruiters, even though they're kind of struggling a little bit right now, or a lot of people are panicking. I think once we show the product on the field and we start winning some of these games that we're not supposed to, or keeping games close that we weren't supposed to, that's how you get that fire and that passion for everybody to come in and want to play for your team, you know?
Right. And I would say, I would add this, Shane, I don't necessarily, you know, I wouldn't just throw out it's going to take 5 years. I'm not a big believer in that. But, you know, Tennessee fans, like you said, they don't want to hear that. But the reality is they need to jump the Vanderbilts and Kentuckys and South Carolina and Missouri. And I think they can do that within a year or two. And then and then you're talking about the next level is, like we're saying, competing against Alabama, competing against Georgia. And maybe that does happen in year two, year three, year four. Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily thinking it's going to take 5 years to get that done. I think Tennessee, with their current staff and everything they have to sell, I do think a really good coach can start to get that done by year three.
I agree. And let me ask you, since we're talking about Tennessee here, I've gotten a lot of messages and tweets and a lot of people asking about, should we be worried about this current class?
Mm-hmm.
I think we shouldn't. It's May. You know, National Signing Day is not till February. You know what I'm saying? So we still got 7 months before we really need to worry. And does the class look grim right now? Yeah. I mean, we got six. And if you take the JUCOs and the long snapper out, looks a little thin, Mike. But I think that if we can win some games, I think we can catch some fire and get some. What we need to do, especially with this recruiting staff, we gotta start securing Knoxville, man. I mean, we cannot have guys like Brian Tucker go to Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're in Knoxville, if they're in your backyard, they need to be coming to Tennessee. We also need to do something to establish some dominance in Nashville. I mean, there's so many great recruits coming out of Nashville, and we're losing them. And you do that by kicking the ass, you know, kicking Vandy's ass, just going in there and just, like you said, just being dominant, not making those games. That's when you can spread your brand across the state. And that's something that they just need to focus on this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of recruiting, I do want to throw this real quick. This was a tweet by Bud Elliott, who works for SB Nation. He sent this out the other day. It went viral. I just thought it was pretty interesting. It gets a lot of these college football fans a view into how these recruits may view your school. Because, you know, we've all got a little, you know, tinted towards our school. But Bud Elliott, he put out a list of elite teams and how old recruits were the last time these schools won a national championship. So Clemson, that's an easy one. These recruits were 17 when Clemson won it all. Alabama, 16. Those don't really stand out. But how about some of these on the list, Shane? Auburn, the last time they won it, these recruits were 9. The last time Florida won a national championship, these recruits were 7. Mm-hmm. LSU, these recruits were 6. And even USC, Southern Cal, these recruits were 3 years old the last time that school won a national championship. And that just seems like that happened, you know, a couple of years ago. So in the minds of a lot of these recruits, there's just not a lot of, you know, pride with that Tennessee name right now. And that's what Jeremy Pruitt's got to get turned around.
That's right, man. There's no brand loyalty anymore. You've just got to do it. You've got to become the team, the one that's on the up and coming, you know. How many times Georgia, we saw this with Georgia. You know, they had a down year when Kirby first started, but then they won some games that they shouldn't have. And next thing you know, they're catching fire, man, and they're recruiting like crazy. People want to be a part of that because they think that's the next team that's coming up. So that's what you have, and it all starts on the field. It starts with good coaching. So developing the players that you do have. If you're not developing those three, make those threes four stars. You know what I'm saying? Make those two stars three stars. You've got to make these players better while you have them. And then when it shows up on the field, you start winning games. The kids see that. They want to be a part of that. And then the recruiting just follows.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, let's jump to College Station.
Giga Maggies.
World Jimbo Fisher, he definitely has got that thing turned in the right direction. The Aggies are recruiting tough. I think they just finished with a number 3 recruiting class. But one thing that a lot of people point to, they seem to go to it immediately in the offseason, that people love looking at the schedule, Shane. I'm not a big fan of doing that. I know we've kind of gone back and forth on this podcast about it. But that's the thing everyone loves to point to with Texas A&M for the fact. Now, granted, they are playing at Clemson. They host Alabama. And they also go to Georgia and to LSU. I mean, mm-hmm. these are quite possibly the top 4 teams in the nation in the preseason here. But Jimbo Fisher, he had a pretty interesting perspective on Texas A&M's schedule, Shane. I just wanted to play this.
Listen, when you
want to make a difference, you have to have opportunity. And you have to have significant opportunity. So when you're playing people like we're playing and they have the schedule we have, you're going to have plenty of opportunities. Is it tough? Is it challenging? Yes. And it's not a cliche. I'm not saying it just because, hey, that's our schedule. But there's a great opportunity where we're at and where we're building this program. It's a great opportunity for us to show the development we've made, the consistency in which we can play with, and then hopefully getting over the hump like we did at the end of the year on those big games and becoming relevant in the national championship hunt. But now that, whether we do that or not, that's going to take time. We got to make sure we lay the foundation to understand how to compete in those games. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity for our players and our organization.
All right, Shane. So the Aggies, you know, gauntlet of death here. It's more of an opportunity than anything. And I think that, you know, it's really easy for people to scoff at that notion. But I think Jimbo's right because, you know, we always see these SEC coaches that are historically good. It's year two when their teams take this huge jump. And while people are starting to get on the A&M bandwagon, you know, they're all saying, oh, 2020 when Kellen Mond's a senior, that'll be the year. If they find a way, Shane, to beat Alabama at home, to beat Clemson on the road, or beat Georgia in Athens, let's say they get two of those three.
Yeah.
I think Texas A&M's going to the college football playoff, and Jimbo's right, where this schedule, while people are looking at it as like, oh, we'll just move past them to 2020, he's selling it as this is our chance to show everybody that we are a college football playoff team.
Yeah, I agree, man. There's a couple schools like this. I think Florida's another one. I mean, you got maybe LSU's in the bubble, but you got Alabama and Georgia there. These two teams are right there knocking on the door. I mean, you could even throw Missouri in there. I really think that they got a good shot this year. So here are these guys. They have nothing but opportunity. And if they go out there and they bring their end game, next thing you know, we're talking about them as one of the blue chips of the SEC. So, yeah, he's right, man. They've got plenty of shots this year to show the nation that Texas A&M's legit.
Yeah, and I keep seeing people have Kellen Mond on their kind of like their dark horse Heisman candidate or one of the, you know, better SEC quarterbacks last year. And I don't think he was that good last year, Shane. I think people, you know, they watched that
Clemson game.
Classic against Clemson.
Yeah.
That LSU game where he scored like 7 or 8 touchdowns. So I'm not trying to take away from the guy. Clearly, he was awesome in those two games. But he was very inconsistent at times during the season. And if he's got this system down, and if he is just – if he's Kellen Mond that we saw in Clemson all year – Texas A&M is going to make some noise and potentially be a college football playoff team. So I wonder if this is a little bit, you know, Jimbo was a quarterback. He's kind of like a quarterback whisperer. I bet this is the same thing he's selling to Kellen Mond. Hell, if you have a great year, I'm sure he's not pushing him to the NFL, but he's letting him know if that's you this year, they're going to be singing, you know, putting you in the mock drafts in 2020. It's going to be your year. It's going to be our year. And I think that's got to be some motivation there for Kellen Mond.
I think a lot of it has to do with Jimbo and with Mond, you know, the progression. If he comes out and he's the same Mond he was last year, yeah, they're going to lose some of these tough games. But if there was some progression in the offseason, you know, everything you hear about Jimbo, if that comes to fruition and we see a Kellen Mond come out and look 10 times better than he did last year, yeah, he could be a dark horse. He could be that game changer that they need.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Athens. Oh, no! Sick him! Where old Kirby Smart, he's on the circuit down there talking to Bulldog fans everywhere, you know, at these offseason club functions and what have you. And two things that he had to say that I thought were particularly interesting. First, let's start with Zamir White, Shane, because that's a guy, you know, obviously Bulldog fans are eager to see him on the field, but a lot of SEC fans may have forgotten about this guy. He was number one ranked running back when he came out, and I think it was the 2018 recruiting class he would have been. So he would have been a freshman last year, but he tore his ACL, and that was following a high school where he kind of did the same thing. And old Kirby Smart says he's gearing up and is going to be cleared. How big would it be for the Bulldogs if Zamir White's 100%? And, I mean, here we are talking about DeAndre Swift and this offensive line. Then you're like, well, they may be backing him up with someone that's even more talented than DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, dude. I mean, they're going to be so damn deep back there. How many you got to have on the line? Seven? I'd put all four of them back there. I'd have like a four running back formation, you know? Don't know who has the ball. That is just crazy. Is there no transfer talk with any of those guys? I mean, you know what I'm saying? They realize they can't all go in there.
Well, that's the beauty of a running back position, because that's what I heard.
I mean, if you listen to this whole interview, he even talks about the walk-ons, the preferred walk-ons he has getting some playing time. I mean, he's playing. I mean, Kirby, I think Kirby's going to have at least eight guys touch the ball a game. I mean, they're going to be so fresh when they come in there. And that's one thing. You know, if they come out and they get that lead, you talk about a weapon. Just being able to always have a fresh tailback back there. These guys can start at any team in the SEC, or almost any team, you know, and just to be able to lean on any of them to get the, you know, finish the game. That's just unreal.
Yeah. So what I was going to say there, this is how they're landing all these elite running backs. From what I'm told, they are selling these guys. Hey, the lifespan of a running back is obviously short. We got to get you to the NFL. The best way to do that, we're going to keep you fresh because we've got so many guys that carry the ball. They are not going to go the damn Derrick Henry route where they give you the ball 40 times a game. You know, there's no need to do that. We'll give it to you 10 to 15, and we'll throw it to you five times. You know, we've got so many players, and that's what they're selling these running backs on. And clearly it's working, building these offensive line, bringing in all these backs. And that's going to be huge for Georgia next season, I think.
That's awesome. That's a great – I didn't think of it like that. That's smart, man. Just create a tailback factory down there. You play every other game. You get 10 snaps, and then you can go to the league. That's smart. And if you could put – and that's something that they can do because you see, you know, yeah, Chubb went, but then you also saw Sony Michel go. And Sony – I mean, win a Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? So they can sell that dream to these guys. So, yeah, man, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
Now, the other thing that Kirby Smart had to say that I thought was particularly interesting, so we're going to cut to his comments here, but, you know, he was asked about Jake Fromm, obviously now no longer playing under Jim Chaney, who's at Tennessee. He's learning under a new offensive coordinator, James Coley, he's been on staff, so it's not going to be a totally new offense, but Kirby Smart just asked about Jake Fromm, his progressions from the spring, and how everything's going there working for James Coley.
Can we talk about the continued development of Jake Fromm, the quarterback? How's that?
Yeah, I think Jake's doing a great job. I think he's got kind of some more quarterback guys around him with Coley going in there working with him. He's excited about that. I think for him, it's been a transition through the coordinator position where he's kind of a sponge. He's got more of an opinion now. He understands what we're trying to do offensively. So I think anytime you've got a three-year starter, he can give you input on the things he likes about the offense, the things he dislikes, the things he thinks can be successful. And that input's helpful. It's always helpful. But ultimately, as coaches, we've got to decide what we're going to do.
All right, Shane, I really like these comments here because you can tell – not that they didn't have trust in Jake Fromm before. They clearly did. So they've been playing him since he was a damn true freshman. But the fact that they're letting him essentially put input on the offense of what he likes, what he doesn't like, I think that's kind of crucial because while Georgia may have a ton of questions at tight end and receiver, I think they're gonna lean a lot on Jake Fromm on what to call out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a smart move, too. Everything I've heard from Jake, you know, he's going to be a great, what would you call it? Like a kind of like Alabama quarterbacks used to be, just general managers, you know, of the game. I think Fromm, you know, just being there so long, knowing the offensive line, knowing the weapons that he does have, Coley in a new position. I think the smart move for both parties here is to let him have more input on the team and during film study, you know. And they're going to be leaning hard on him, especially with all these young guys coming in at wide receiver.
Yeah, and you just popped something into my head, Shane. I never thought of this before, but I mean, I'm just envisioning it right now. I think Jake Fromm, when his NFL career's over, he's going to work for the SEC Network being like a Greg McElroy. Like, couldn't you see that from Jake Fromm?
I can. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's going to get caught in some sort of Snapchat controversy or something too, though, you know?
All right, Shay, let's all jump down to Baton Rouge.
Go Tigers.
Where, you know, we got a bit of news here with the Tigers. They finally got some depth there at defensive back. And now that may be going out the window because sophomore defensive back Kelvin Joseph has jumped into the transfer portal, Shane. This guy was a top 50 recruit. He saw the field, I believe, in 11 games last year. So he, by no means was he a starter by any point last year, but he was working his way towards that. And I'm not really sure what's going on here, Shane, because there's reports that he's out of the transfer portal. There's a story from NOLA.com that his dad says there's no way in hell he's leaving LSU. And then he's responded to that report and basically said, that's BS. My dad don't know what he's talking about. So I don't know what the heck's going on here. But this is, you know, would not be a good sign, I don't think, for LSU because they're losing Greedy Williams. Yes, they're bringing in the true freshman stud defensive back, Stingley, but I'm wondering if Stingley is so impressive that he's pushing Joseph out. He's like, my God, I'll never start over this guy. Do you think that could be playing into this at all?
For sure. I mean, the hype train was pretty – I mean, it was moving there at spring, including myself. I mean, I think this kid's going to be wearing number 7 before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure he's reading the same – Twitter articles that are coming out, and he may be thinking, hey, if they're going to crown this guy, I'm going to go find somewhere else to play. but apparently his dad does not agree.
Yeah, so I have no idea what's going on here. Hopefully we get a resolution here soon, but I think LSU definitely wants him back. But it remains to be seen if Kelvin Joseph will be back for his second year there in Baton Rouge. And last thing, this is real quick, Shane, just wanted to include this. Coach O, he knows he's getting the hype. I actually saw Pro Football Focus, Shane. They've got LSU as the number 3 team in the nation above Georgia. Mm. How is LSU going to avoid the hype? Coach O lays it out right here.
Block out the noise. It's even tougher because you want to read good things about yourself. You know, we know that we have a good football team coming back. But when we come back in August, we got to turn off all the news, all the Twitter machine, all that, and get back to work and doing the things that really count.
He's staying off the Twitter machine, Shane.
You got to stay off them Twitters, man.
All right, Shane, let's jump down to Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide!
I'm not 100% sure when this interview was recorded. I think it was obviously sometime this offseason, but old Tua was asked about his first touchdown of the year. It came against Louisville there, and I believe that was in Orlando. That non-conference, you know, neutral site affair there. But if you can't remember the play, anyone that doesn't remember it, basically Tua was getting rushed and he literally did a 360 and then he jumped in the air. Someone destroyed him in the ankles and he threw a touchdown to Jerry Jeudy. Then he got hurt and he was just asked, what in the hell were you thinking on this play?
What about the one against Louisville where you ran around, first touchdown of the year, and you threw it to the back right corner?
That was a God bless him road tide. Jeez, never doing that again.
Tua's got it. Spins away, throws to the end zone. Whiskey throw, run for a touchdown.
What had happened was I seen Jerry, and his man wasn't even looking, but Jerry was wide open at the start, but I couldn't throw it to him because I had to kind of spin out of pressure. So by the time that guy hit Jerry, like I threw it up so Jerry could turn, and the rest is history. I didn't see if Jerry caught it or not. I was hurt and I was on the ground.
All right, Shane, so this is basically my only knock on Tua at this point, and it's a small knock, but sometimes he does force the issue. I like to call it a little bit of hero ball, and yeah. Sometimes you want that from your quarterback. Against Louisville, it's fine. Against Clemson, obviously, that'll burn you. But I just thought this was a pretty funny little clip. And this is something that, you know, Nick Saban has kind of hit it at, too, this offseason, where Tua has got to take what the defense gives him. He's got to stop forcing it down the field. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is something that could, I don't know if derail is the right word here, but maybe just keep Alabama from winning the SEC if he does not get this issue corrected?
Well, a couple things on this one. This is Louisville, and that was week one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the first game they played? So mm-hmm. If you watch the video of that play, it was absolutely horrible, and every coach would cringe if they watched the replay. I'm sure in film study, Saban ripped him a new one. because you can't have that. You can't just be airing it out. Are great. Granted, your wide receivers are extremely talented. Most, I mean, if you're going to throw a 50-50 ball, there's a good shot your guy's going to come down with it. But you can't play team all teams the same. I mean, you look at Clemson. There's no 50-50 balls with Clemson. They're just as talented on that side of the ball. So, you know, when you play these opponents that aren't as good as you, this is where you build that confidence, that like Tua has been doing. Mm-hmm. And then when you go against teams that are as talented as you, it comes back and bites you. So I really do think, because this isn't the first time we've heard it. Yeah, it's not the first time we've heard it from Saban. You know, so I do think that this is a point of emphasis this offseason, and I think we're going to see a little bit better at game management next year with Tua.
Yeah, and I think that's basically the only thing that's going to hold him back. That, and, you know, he's got to prove he's a little bit more durable. But
yeah, I'm sorry.
But we're basically picking apart, I think, the guy that should have won the Heisman last year. I think he was the most explosive and outstanding player. But he's not perfect, but he's damn near close.
Yeah. Well, I think too, another thing they're working on is he does not need to create things with his legs. They need him. They need him to be healthy and be on the field. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of drills on how to get down safe, how to throw the ball out of bounds, you know, just be smarter with the football.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, we got a couple teams here. We're going to knock these out real quick because not, you know, big news for any of these teams really, but worth noting here, Ole Miss, they've got two linebackers that have left the team. Kevontae Ruggs, who is the brother of Alabama receiver Henry Ruggs, and Josh Clark, both leaving the Rebels. And they were both suspended late in the season. So, you know, it was during the spring they were suspended, excuse me. So may have been some kind of disciplinary issues there with them. But just my thing with them, Shane, Ole Miss switching to a 3-4 defense under the new defensive coordinator Mike McIntyre. And hell, Shane, they run a 3-4, you can't do it without linebackers. And while these guys were by no means stars at this point in their career, they were two, you know, very young and promising players. And I don't know, just – I'm obviously not that high on Ole Miss, and this is not helping their cause, in my opinion.
No, that's, I mean, the last thing they need. Of course, if they're creating trouble in the locker room, then maybe you don't need them. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And then let's jump to Gainesville real quick, Shane. We're Florida. They had Rashad Jackson. He entered the NCAA transfer portal. Now, he has not officially left, but I do not expect him to return. This is a guy that started three games last year early in the season and then kind of, I don't want to say fell out of favor, but just became more of a special teams player. And during the spring, it looked like, you know, there was no chance he was going to start. Clearly, you don't want to lose depth, but it looks like Rashad Jackson will not be returning to Gators. And last but not least here, Kentucky got a nice pickup here, Shane. Former Florida State linebacker Xavier Peters, who he actually signed with FSU over Kentucky. He was a former Kentucky commit, Under Armour All-American, and he is trying to get a waiver to play immediately. And with Kentucky losing Josh Allen, you know, they're going to need some help there at linebacker to help old Cash Daniels. So if Xavier Peters, if he gets eligible, I think that'll be a big get there for the Wildcats.
Yeah, for sure, man.
All right, Shane, we've got a little bit of like a commitment roundup here. But right before we get to that, I did want to make this last note here. This is an NCAA overall note. Late last week, the NCAA announced that they are forming a working group. And what that means is essentially just ADs and presidents and stuff from all across the nation get together and discuss issues. And this is how we got that new red shirt rule where you can play for four games. So generally when these people get together, they make recommendations and then it gets voted on and then it becomes rules. And what they are meeting on specifically is name, image, and likeness for college athletes. And why that's big news for us and fans of the NCAA video game, that's exactly why that game went away, because the game makers and the colleges essentially did not have permission to use the players' name, image, and likeness to put it in that video game. So if that returns, Shane, we may be getting our NCAA game here in a couple of years.
EA Sports. It's in the game.
That was awesome.
I'm ready, man.
So we just want to make that note, but it's like I said, it's not going to be anywhere around the corner. They're not going to sneak up with that NCAA 2020 on us, but
I don't want to venture out of the SEC, but this is something that Dabo was talking about, mm-hmm. about paying the players, and
right,
if he wanted to be professional, he'd just go play. He'd coach for the pros. Did you see that?
Oh, that was great, Shade. I had so many people respond to me that there's no chance in hell Dabo is going to make $93 million in the NFL. I mean, he's going to have to take a damn pay cut himself if he wants to do that. So,
and he's going to have to coach on Sunday, you know? I mean, come on, brother Dabo, you ain't going to do that.
Yeah, there's no way that's happening. But just for anyone that is unclear what this exactly means, you know, the schools are not going to pay the players. That's not going to happen. But what this could open the window, you know, open the door to is maybe like advertising or car dealerships, not necessarily giving away cars, but, you know, you go down to Tuscaloosa Toyota and they got a picture of Tua, you know, maybe he'll sign you a damn autograph if you buy one of their trucks or something. You know, it'll make stuff like that legal. And I hear a lot of people say, well, hell, you know, these damn boosters will just line up jobs for these guys, but, and that may be true, but I mean, we're basically there already, well, Shane. So, I mean,
but Mike, here's the thing that drives me nuts. Okay. You don't want to. Okay. So here you got EA Sports, you've got the NCAA. They don't want to pay players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So come out with a game with random players. I mean, I don't understand how hard this is. It doesn't have to be created to their likeness. You know what I'm saying? So, or start each with an all team SEC, like teams, you know, like players that have already been at your university. Maybe you want to pay them or something like that. I just don't understand why the players would be involved. If they come out with the EA Sports game and your roster's full of just random generated players, and you can create dynasties, you could play online, yada, yada, yada. Maybe make it where you cannot alter, you know, that first group. You know, on year five, you can start altering names and attributes and stuff like that. I think there should be a loophole just in the game itself where the players wouldn't be involved with EA Sports.
Well, Shane, I'm just going to tell you, just wait patiently because it's coming.
Okay.
It's coming. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of money, Mike. They ain't going to leave it on the table long. Poor Doug Flutie. You know, he sticks his, you know, he went for a Hail Mary and this one got picked. You know, EA Sports is out there.
All right, Shane. So that's all the news we have around the league, but we do have a little bit of a commitment roundup. There's been a couple commits since we last recorded, so we're just going to run through a couple of those. And the main reason I really wanted to do this on the recruiting trail, Shane, I want to give people a window into the life of SEC Mike when he's waiting for one of these damn commitments because he's writing an article on it. But this one came with Justin Rogers. I'm not trying to take away anything from the young man. 4-star lineman from Michigan who commit to Kentucky over Tennessee and Georgia. He had visited all three officially and then came away deciding Kentucky was the choice for him, Shane. But here's what happened. They announced, they said, this commitment's going down 4:30. You can view it here. You know, so I tune in. I tune in about 10 minutes early to make sure I've got everything going. Here we mm-hmm. go. Here's the commitment, 4:30, and it's just a table. There's no one sitting at the table. There's nothing. Well, that's fairly common. 10, 15 minutes, they get it going. And then in all these commitments, Shane, I know you've watched them too sometimes.
Yeah.
You got the high school coach up there talks about what a great person he is. You got parents come up and talk about how proud they are. Mm-hmm. You got high school coaches or teachers come up and talk about what a great art student they are. And then next thing you know, Shane, big time, they're ready for the commitment. They roll out a huge projector screen for Justin Rogers' commitment. And all it says is, unable to read media. So then they have to keep talking about what a great guy he is, and they bring out the IT guy, the tech guy. He's out there. He's working on it for 20 minutes. The microphone's working this entire time, I should say. So this video's got nothing to do with – he could have just said he was committing wherever he wanted to. Okay, after about 25 minutes, Shane, they get the video going. They get it going. They get it cranked up. It starts playing. There's people in the front row. It looks like his family here. And they're actually filming the video that he's playing on that screen, which I'm sure if they just asked nicely, hey, Justin, can I get a copy of that video as soon as it's done? I think he would send it to him, but maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know what's going on here. And then at the end of the video, Shane, it doesn't even reveal who he commits to. It says, I commit to, and then it cuts to black, and then he puts on a Kentucky hat. So I waited all that damn time to watch him put on a hat that he could have put on at the beginning. But, I mean, that was a hell of a get for Kentucky. It was just a bad viewing experience for me, I guess I could say.
So how long did it finally take to get this?
About 48 minutes.
That you'll never get back. Oh, my gosh.
And in addition to that, Shane, Florida. I thought this was pretty significant. You know, they're back on a recruiting tear a little bit here. They picked up a three-star tight end named Jonathan Odom out of Florida. And then this one I thought was even more significant, Shane, a four-star defensive back, Joel Williams. And why that's big, he's from Louisiana, near Baton Rouge, I believe. He picked Florida over Tennessee and LSU. And then Alabama picked up a four-star receiver that his name escapes me at the moment, but he's picked over Tennessee. So I'm sure you were happy to see that. And then Mississippi State picked up one of the best running backs in Georgia, four-star running back Joquervius Marks. And they also picked up a JUCO defensive end, Devontae McCray. And last but not least, Shane, Tennessee suffered a decommit here, Ebony Jackson, a week after he picked up an Alabama offer. So, Knoxville, is it still standing, yeah. Shane?
Well, here's an idea. Maybe we shouldn't be playing paintball right now, Mike. Maybe we should be out there recruiting so we can stop being the shortlist team, you know?
Oh, a final news update here, Shane, quickly here. They have officially announced some TV times for the week one and week two. So this is, you know, just gives you a little bit more hype for the season. But Auburn and Oregon, that's going to be the primetime ABC game. And that's going to kick off at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central. So Auburn, Oregon, they're getting primetime. And then week two, Shane, two big games here involving SEC teams. Texas A&M at Clemson. That's going to kick off at 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central Time on ABC. And that's going to be followed up by LSU at Texas, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on ABC. Those are going to be some hell of a game there. Week two, I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, buddy, man. I'm telling you what, we're counting down jerseys already. I love it. You know, before you know it, we're going to be out of defense. We're going to be what do we got? Wide receivers and linebackers and linemen. Then, you know, before you know it, we'll be down in the quarterbacks and running backs. So I'm excited, brother. I love it. I'm ready for some damn football, Mike. That's all there is to it.
All right, Shane, before we jump off here, though, I believe we've got one review. Isn't that correct?
Yeah!
Thank you for being a friend.
Actually, we got a couple ghost reviews, and I appreciate everybody taking the time to give us a review and rating on iTunes. But one of our fellow compadres went a little step further and gave us an actual written review, so I'd like to read that. It's from Davy Crockett, 19. Says, great podcast, 5-star. Love the information these guys provide. Can we please just get rid of the Butch and Champions of Life clip?
Yeah, and I'll give a little update on that with, you know, before the season kicks off, I'm going to update that intro. It's going to be similar, but I think it's just going to include more highlights from the pressers. You know, we had plenty of press conference highlights from last season, so I'll probably update that and get rid of Butch Jones once and for all, but that is a classic clip. We had to include that when we started this thing, but you know, here soon we'll get a new one out.
Absolutely, man. Well, again, like I said, I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. You know, if you didn't give us a rating review, that's okay too. I mean, it's May and you're hanging out with the SEC podcast. So I'm just looking forward to maybe getting some more episodes out here shortly. Like I said, just I'm working on a few things here at the house, and hopefully it should be ironed out going forward. But we'll keep you updated when a new one's about to hit.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.
EA Sports. It's in the game.